How to Pay for College HQ Podcast, episode 55.
How to Pay for College HQ Podcast, where our goal is to earn a degree debt-free with your host, my mom, Celeste Horton.
All right, well, welcome back to another episode of How to Pay for College HQ. This is your host, Celeste Horton, and I am so glad that you are here to join me again today. I've got two amazing guests today, so this is going to be a fun experience, and it is Steve and Annette Economides, New York Times best-selling authors and motivational speakers, and they're the founders of MoneySmartFamily.com. And so I'm very excited to introduce Steve and Annette. How are you both doing today?
We're great.
It's great to be here, Celeste.
Thank you so much. I'm so honored. This is going to be so much fun. So basically, we're going to start our discussion today with the idea of the debt-free degree. Is it fantasy or is it fact? What is your two thoughts on that?
Well, we've done a lot of research because we have five kids.
Woo!
And years ago, when we were first married and I was earning $838 a month as a pay stub artist at a printing company, we met with a financial planner because we were debt-free. We were living on a budget. And the financial planner told us that to pay for college for our children, we ought to be saving $200 a month, 25% of our income.
This was 32 years ago.
Oh, wow. So 25% of your income, you're going to have to save $200.
It wasn't realistic.
Well, no.
And what we decided instead, because I was never a real high wage earner, we just decided we would invest in our kids rather than invest the money. And that's kind of where our strategies came from. We tried it with our kids, and it worked. And we've been speaking around the country, encouraging other parents that they can do the same thing. And those are kind of the things we'll talk about here. But one of the things we start one of our speeches with when we talk about debt-free college, fantasy or reality, is we talk about writing checks.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's kind of scary to write big checks. And one of the things that the biggest expense that most people have is a house.
Basically, if you look at the cost of a college education today, the percentage increase, inflation has been astronomical. I'm going to just quote you some things. A dozen eggs in 1975 cost 77 cents. Today it can be $1.30. That's 168% increase.
Wow.
A first class stamp, 10 cents back in 1975. Today, 49 cents, about a 500% increase. I'm going to skip a few. We've got the price of gas and gold, but a college tuition back in 1975, if you went to ASU and you were a resident, it was $600 a semester.
Wow.
Now, actually, that's a year. I think that's a year. It was $300 a semester. Now it's $10,000 for the year. College is inflating at a rate that is unparalleled to any other inflation rate in our country, 1,666%.
Wow.
And I think the reason that college tuition is inflating at the rate it's inflating is because so many people think it's acceptable to take out loans. Even some of the hottest, most recognized brand name finance people are saying it's okay to take out school loans because you're investing in your future.
It's good debt is what they say.
And we're going to say that is a bunch of baloney.
I agree.
One of the things we tweeted a few weeks ago, and it went pretty wild, was that when borrowed money is easy to find, prices always increase.
Oh, exactly. And
this
it's
is what
and it's
happened in the housing market, and this is what's happening with colleges.
And especially so easy money that's not bankruptable, too.
That's why it's easy to lend, because lenders will not lose.
Mm-hmm. Right. But it's so, so scary. I mean, I know we normally end our college talk with this, but I'm going to start it with, if you take the average college student graduating with $30,000 in school loans and they marry another average college student, that's someone with another $30,000. They're starting their marriage with $60,000 in school loans. If they each have a car that they took out a loan on at $10,000, now you're talking about $80,000. That marriage might last 7 years under that financial pressure.
Under that much stress. It's so scary. It really, really is. Yeah.
So what we're hoping to do is encourage parents that there's another way to live. You know, debt and borrowing and giving our kids this education, giving it to them rather than helping them work for it, is not a way to financial freedom. Currently, right now, 60% of parents are supporting their adult children.
I know.
That's not a good thing.
No.
You know, kids are graduating from college. They aren't getting jobs. They're just coming back home and sitting on the couch.
Okay, so we're going to throw a lot at you today, Celeste.
I love it.
We only have a little bit of time, but we're going to throw as much as we can. We're going to talk about one person that we know. He's a TV celebrity, and he said, and he had the money to fund 4 years for each of his kids, but what he did was he said, look, the college experience is new. I'm sending them away to a good private school. The first year, I'll fund 100%. The second year, I'll fund 75%. The third year, I'll fund 50%. And the last year, I'll fund 25%. He said he had three kids, and each one of them, by their last year, was funding 100% of their education.
Wow.
The key there is he communicated in advance the expectations he had. And he also was really smart, and he helped his kids learn how to work and how to research scholarships. And by the end, they paid for their own school.
But let's start with some other things to consider first. First of all, should every kid head off to college at 18? You've got to know your kid. Not every kid should head off at 18. Maybe they need to work full-time for a year or two. Maybe they need to start at the community college. When you think about community college, there's some sort of a stigma when a kid goes to a community college, like they're not bright, they're not the brightest, or I don't know. But the thing is really ridiculous because, really, if you start at a community college and you go there for 2 years, you graduate, you head to a four-year university. Once you have that four-year degree, does anybody ever ask where you went the first 2 years?
No.
No.
Yeah.
And just dollars and cents-wise, what is the cost savings of going to a community college for 2 years and then finishing up at a four-year university?
It's huge.
And we say that the cost difference is somewhere around $60,000.
Wow.
In savings.
But,
and it, so if money is tight, why not? You know, just that it's one thing to consider. What we did with our kids is we started them with community college classes while they were in high school. So it was dual enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
And they took one class a semester, sometimes two. And by the time they graduated high school, they had 30 credits to their name. And it was usually A's and B's, which qualified them for a lot of scholarship money. They were prepared to do college-level work, and it cut a year off of their four-year degree.
But the other thing to think about is not every kid is cut out to be a lawyer, a doctor, an engineer. And the community college system here in Arizona, I think it's Gateway, mm-hmm. has programs such as, becoming plumbers and electricians and
air conditioning
specialists. There was one program, believe it or not, head of maintenance, which is not as easy as you might think it would be. And there were companies like Intel where if you went through this program, they were guaranteeing you a job with benefits.
Wow.
And I think some of them were covering your 2 year college education as well.
So one of the things to consider is a 4 year degree. Is that the goal for our child? Is that where their mindset is? Or are they more hands on? Would they be a better plumber or electrician, an HVAC technician? You know, in all those careers, the earnings are at least the median income in America, or median household income. They're over $50,000 a year, and they can be more if they know how to work.
Yeah, a radiologist tech with an AA, that's a two-year degree, earns $55,000 a year. Now, we know kids that are graduating with a four-year degree in English and can earn nothing.
Yes.
So, see, it's not – the four-year degree is not the magic.
Mm-mm.
It's knowing who your kid is and hooking them up to the best thing that they're going to love. Our daughter goes to work and she says, I don't feel like I'm going to a job. I love my job so much.
Oh, I love
that. And you're thinking, yeah, that's what it's all about here.
Here's another crazy idea. And these are some parents, friends of ours for years and years. This guy was my GP. He ended up becoming a missionary doctor in Papua New Guinea. He had five kids. Two of their kids came back to school to go to
Maricopa County Skill Center.
They were going to go to, what's the university?
Oh, Laterno.
Laterno, which is a very expensive school. And these parents didn't have a lot of money, so they sent their kids to the Maricopa County Skill Center. One kid became a PRN.
Right, and the other one was a welder.
A welding technician.
So that they could work part-time jobs while they went through school. And now they're graduated.
So when they were working through school, though, they didn't work at McDonald's. One of them worked at a
nursing home. And the other one worked for the school lab, and he loved welding so much, he went on to become a mechanical engineer and now works at Boeing.
Oh, wow. So they did a little bit of trade skills before they started college, and then they were able to have a good job to help pay their way.
Right.
Yep. When we were first married, we had a friend who went to school
to be a barber,
and then he worked cutting hair to go through engineering school, and now he works at Raytheon. I think he's been there for almost 30 years. But it's a smart way to prepare your kids, if they want to get that four-year degree, to be able to fund it. So let them take a year and get a certification so they can work part-time at a job that doesn't just pay minimum wage.
But let's back up just a minute and talk about, let's throw out a couple of things that kids can do in high school to prepare.
Love it.
To figure out, is college at 18 the right thing for
or
them?
Or which major in college?
Right.
Because 50% of freshmen change their major at least once, and that's a waste of money and time.
Right.
It is.
So we got our kids involved in lots of things, and the way we worked it with our kids is if you signed up for something, you had to stick with it at least for a year. After a year, if you didn't like it, you could try something different, but you had to give it at least a year to figure it out. So one of our kids was in a 4-H club. All three of our sons did scouting, Boy Scouting, and they're all three Eagle Scouts, which gets them pay raises if they're in the military or if they work a civil service job.
It raises them one,
right.
One pay grade.
One of our kids did, one did Police Explorers and one did Air Force Explorers. Kids can do at YMCA, Youth in Government. They can do Junior Achievement. They can do Junior ROTC. Anything, any kind of the clubs that your kids can be involved in high school. A lot of colleges are looking for community service,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of clubs have community service requirements. They want a well-rounded kid. They don't want a kid that is just good at academics. They want them to have social skills. They want them to have
leadership skills.
Make sure they sign up for an honor society if they can play sports and become
You're running ideas together here really quick.
I'm jumping all over the place.
We're trying to build a resume that opens a college recruiter's eyes and says, this kid is well-rounded, has leadership skills, is smart, and knows how to work.
Right.
Those are all valuable things when you're looking at colleges and when you're looking to get scholarships, because even 4-H has scholarships.
Yes.
Boy Scouts have
yep.
scholarships for Eagle Scouts. Our daughter Becky did a
Congressional Award.
A program that's not very well known, but it sounds impressive. She's a Congressional Award Gold Medal recipient. And that requires 400 hours of personal development, physical fitness, and 200 hours of, I can't remember, there's a lot of...
Volunteer service, personal development, physical fitness, and an expedition or an exploration.
And that's a program that can be done on your own, at your own pace.
Right.
Wow.
You know, we've got to get through an hour's outline here in just a few minutes, so we are really flying. But the other thing I wanted to mention is make sure you let your kids volunteer places in
yes.
high school to figure out. Like at one point, our oldest daughter thought she wanted to be a vet. So we found a vet near our home, and Becky volunteered up there one day a week. And after 6 months, she's like, I don't want to be a vet, Mom.
Uh-huh.
They spend most of their life spaying, neutering, cleaning teeth, and cutting nails.
Oh.
That's not what I want to do.
Right.
So she knew that. Our son John actually worked. He thought for years he wanted to be a policeman. He went to SCC for a criminal justice degree. But at the same time, he was working at a very large church in the valley in their whole sound and lighting. Well, he ended up seeing a lot of hypocrisy in the police department, and he walked away from that dream of being a policeman. But he ended up making his living at the part-time job. First it was volunteer, then it was a part-time job, then it was a full-time job, working for this sound and lighting department at this church. Now he's traveling all over the country doing shows with NASCAR, doing conventions with GoDaddy and Google.
He wears his goggles to do Google. It's really important.
It is amazing how we've watched our kids pursue their passions and just really thrive.
Oh, that's so heartwarming, because that is. That's what I want, and I know that's what all my listeners want, too, is you really want your children to find what they're passionate about and what they love, and it's all about those experiences we can help them find or be involved in before they go off to college, and it's so important.
Now, yes.
You can tell that we aren't kind of normal parents who just said, you know, let you just go figure out what you're going to do, Johnny. You know, we were really involved. We tried not to control. We tried to guide.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we made it work. Other times our kids kind of resented the fact that we were so involved. But the point is, involved parents help make kids more successful. And it's a huge responsibility to take a 17-year-old who's never earned more than $4,000 a year and sit them down with a college recruiter who's going to help them sign a contract for upwards of $120,000 worth of education expenses.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the average American who earns $50,000 a year going out and borrowing or signing a contract to spend over $1 million.
Yes.
It's not realistic for a 17-year-old to be prepared to do that.
No. So let's talk for about 5 minutes about testing, because
yes.
That's another one of those things that could really yield great scholarship money as you're heading toward some of these four-year universities. You know, there's ACT tests and there's SAT tests.
Mm-hmm.
And there are places, there's testing centers online that you can go through your public library.
Testing websites. And one of our favorites is mylearninglibrary.com.
LearningExpress.com.
LearningExpressLibrary.com. To access through your public library. They have not only SAT testing, but they also have GRE, they have civil service exams, free. And those tests are really extensive for our kids. They spent hours there. Another one we used was called number2.com, and that one's another free one. It's not quite as in-depth as Learning Express Library, but using those two testing sources, Joe was applying to he's our youngest son. He was applying to a private Christian school to get in, and they told him that if he raised his SAT score 50 points, he could qualify for $3,000 more in scholarship money.
Yes.
So he studied for about a month.
It was 18. He put 18 hours of study time in.
And he scored like 160 points more than he needed to.
Wow.
And so we figured at 18 hours, he earned $166 an hour
studying
to raise his SAT score.
So the two websites that you listed, are those are studying aids for the ACTs and the SATs? Is
correct.
That what? Okay. Those are webs and they're free study sites. Yes.
Right.
I know it's amazing. ASU and U of A, they now have the scholarships on them just based upon your automatic SAT or ACT scores in combination with your GPA. And there's no applications even necessary, that once you apply, they just look at your scores and boom, that's a straight scholarship that you get off your tuition. So there is a lot of dollars sitting there with those test scores.
Yeah.
For sure.
You know, what's really wild is, and we should probably talk about scholarships, because there's a whole game to play there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've got your kids involved in activities to build their resume, and you've had them get a part-time job so they've got some skin in the game where they're starting to save for college, then you tell them, you know, you're earning $8 an hour, $9 an hour part-time. How would you like to earn $100 an hour?
Mm-hmm.
They'll look at you like, what are you talking about? And that's what we're saying, when you start helping them get involved in the scholarship game, that's what the stakes are.
Exactly.
It's amazing, and there's so many scholarships. I'll tell you one story. Joe was working at the university he was attending. He was working in the finance department, and he made friends with the people in financial aid. And one day, this gal sent him an email saying, hey, Joe, there's a scholarship you need to apply for. It's for business majors. You know, they started helping him find these scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
Another day, I got an email from a friend saying, there's another scholarship for business majors. They're offering $500 to anybody. You don't even have to write a resume. You just have to give them kind of a little background on yourself. He wrote for the scholarship and got $1,000 instead of $500 because they had so few applicants.
It's
crazy what's out there.
So
let's talk about FAFSA for a minute, because that's important, mm-hmm. too. Each family, if they think they might qualify for some Pell Grant money, they should go through the process of filling out FAFSA every year. And Steve, you do that with our kids, so you talk through that real quick.
FAFSA, our first step is to get a PIN number, and that usually takes a week to receive through email. So you go to the fafsa.ed.gov website, sign up for a PIN number, have that sent to you, and then be prepared with your students' financial information, their bank account amount, and how much they earn during the year, and then your personal information. You're going to need all that. And we tell parents it's going to take between 2 and 4 hours to fill out the FAFSA.
Right.
Once you get it filled out, it's not going to take that long every year.
But the other thing to say is there's a lot of counterfeit websites out there that will charge you fees.
Right.
So you've got to make sure you got you have the exact one, and it's fafsa.ed.gov. That is free. If you go to some of the other ones, they may be charging you, and you shouldn't have to pay for this.
Okay. It's just
and another thing we tell parents is you've got to be smart about where the money is located. In the FAFSA world, if your student has money, let's say a grandparent gives them for college or something like that, and it's in the student's name, that counts more against the student's Pell money that they can get than it does if it's in the parent's name. Or if, say, the grandparents held on to the money rather than giving it to them specifically, then that wouldn't have to be declared on FAFSA. There are other strategies. We learned from a guy named Ben Kaplan, who wrote the book How to Go to College Almost for Free. And he's got some really good scholarship tips. And that's, you know, if you want to reduce the or increase the amount of Pell Grant and other scholarships you get, parents should look at taking some of their savings and reducing the amount of money they have in the bank by paying off debt, by paying mortgages, those kind of things.
Buying the car maybe you were thinking about buying.
We never encourage debt. We always encourage people to pay cash for things. But if you can reduce the amount of money you have saved without jeopardizing your financial situation, your child can qualify for more FAFSA. And here's what we just had a daughter, our youngest daughter got married in June. She's in college right now. She married a guy who's in college. And we had to do some real strategizing with FAFSA before they got married, because normally we fill FAFSA out in January, but they were getting married in June. If you fill FAFSA out in January, but your marital status changes in June, you cannot update FAFSA. At that point, she would have only qualified for about $1,500 to $2,000 worth of FAFSA. We waited to fill out her FAFSA until after she was married, so we got two broke college students going to school, and they both qualified for maximum Pell Grant, which was $11,000 total, together, $5,500.
Wow.
So learning to play the game and being smart about it.
Right.
Now, they both are living on a budget, a written budget every month, where they manage their money, they're saving money.
They're working part-time, they're going to school.
And they haven't borrowed a dime to go to school, and they're both juniors in college.
I love that about budgeting. I know, is that something that you guys talk a lot about in to help your students or your children understand more about even living on a budget? Do you have some recommendations for that?
It is. Our first book, America's Cheapest Family Gets You Right on the Money, is a fabulous book for teaching budgeting in very practical terms, layman's words, and just a general overall household finance book where it talks about every area of household finances, from housing and utilities and cars, to savings and vacations and recreation and clothes and medical bills, everything.
Let's talk a little bit about the word budget, because there are so many – when I say budget, people have so many different interpretations of what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, it's a noose around my neck, my hand tied behind my back. I can only spend money on bread and water. You know, and when we say budget, what we mean, our interpretation of it is – we have a system in place, kind of like cash envelopes, but not really, where every paycheck we divide up a little bit of that money and put it into predetermined categories, some for the house, some for insurance, some for food, clothes, utilities, even down to pets and gifts. And every paycheck we take a little bit of money out of that paycheck and we put a little bit into those categories so that we're always saving in advance of the expenses. And when it comes time to pay the college tuition bill or when it comes time to pay the auto insurance bill, we look at that category and we know how much money we have to spend. Or when it comes time to take a vacation, instead of saying, where do we want to go, what we do is we look at the vacation account and we say, how much money do we have? And that determines how much vacation we can afford. It's a whole different way of living, but the freedom that it gives us and the peace that it gives us is incredible. So what we did with our kids is we developed a system, we call it a Money Smart Kids system, and all of our kids used this when they were younger, where they earned money by doing certain things around the house every day, and they earned points, but we won't go into that right now. But what was required was that they took that money and they had to manage it into initially three envelopes, give, save, and spend, And then when they turned 9, they started buying their own clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And when they got their first job at 16, they started paying for their own auto insurance, their camps, school activities, those kind of things. The goal was that by the time they're 18, we've moved most of the financial responsibilities for living expenses onto their shoulders so that when they go off to college, they've learned how to manage $3,000 or $4,000 a year rather than just being given the money from mom and dad. It's kind of like, I don't know if you're an athlete at all, but it's kind of like weightlifting. If the parents do all the weightlifting, the child never gains any strength.
Right.
So we started the kids lifting 1 pound weights, and that was when they were 3 or 5 years old. They were earning 5 cents a point, you know, $2.50 a week. By the time they're 16 and they're earning that $200 paycheck every week or 2 weeks, they've increased their financial strength so that they can handle and manage that money. So that when they finally graduate from college, they'll be able to manage a $27,000 or $35,000 or $50,000 a year income without squandering it.
Yes.
And that's the goal.
I love that, because that is, to me, that's one of the biggest issues, of you, as you've said, is just so much of our youth, they have no idea how to manage money. And then they're, if, you know, and then comes the option to take out loans and they just see this high dollar and they, it's just, it's so scary that I think that that is one of the biggest issues that we really have to hit with our young students and youth, is to just help them understand how to manage money.
And in our book, our third book is called The Money Smart Family System, Teaching Financial Independence to Children of Every Age. The largest chapter is dealing with trade schools and college. But one of the things we talk about is there are many ways that parents can send their kids off to college and help them remain financially stable or strong. And that's, you know, if the parents want to fund college for the student, you know, that's going to be their choice. We don't think that's the smartest thing. We think kids need to have a skin in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But how many parents do we know of where they just gave an uninformed, uneducated child a credit card and said, go off to school and you know, sink or swim?
Mm-hmm.
The parents end up paying for that credit card bill.
Yeah.
And our thinking is there are much smarter ways if you want to go that way, and that would be, let's give your child some limits. So if you're willing to spend $2,000 a month on their living expenses, put it on a prepaid debit card.
But really,
that way you limit the liability and you've empowered the child to pay for their own expenses.
But really, think about this. The college students that we know that have lived on campus,
mm-hmm.
you know, if they have a food plan, a meal plan,
mm-hmm.
they get a card for that. There's no cash that needs to be exchanged for that.
Mm-hmm.
If they're living on campus, they have all their utilities, their Wi-Fi, their housing. It's all covered. So really, the only cash they would need is for discretionary spending.
Well, they should earn that.
I agree. 100% there.
There's plenty of jobs on campus that college kids can get.
Exactly.
And they should be working 10 or 15 hours a week to come up with recreational money spending. Parents shouldn't even need to give their kids any
right.
money once they're on that campus.
While we were writing the book, we researched whether it was common, I don't know which, acceptable for kids to work when they're in college. Because we hear so many parents say, well, you know, my child can't work. Their job is to get good grades. And the research soundly proves that kids that work between 15 and 20 hours a week kept their grades as good as or better than kids who didn't work a job and were good students.
Yep.
So it doesn't hurt them. It actually, I think it helps them be more responsible.
But another thing, you know how we talked earlier, Celeste, about knowing your kids? Because if they're totally immature, they're ill-equipped to deal with money, they don't really know what they want to do with their life. And just sending them off to college because it's like the status quo, it's what everybody does when your kid's 18, I just want to say, please stop and think about this.
Yes.
You know, does your kid even need to live on campus? If you live near a college, you know, sometimes living at home for the first 2 years so that they can get the whole gist of the whole college work and the college level and the expectation and the academic, you know, getting that under their belt rather than being thrown into this adolescent party scene,
mm-hmm.
you're going to save a minimum of $6,000 a year if your child lives at home.
Yes, and that's huge.
It's very huge, not only monetarily, but for your kid, like emotionally and physically and academically, it can be a big plus.
It can.
You know, and if your kid wants to experience that college life, let him live there the last 2 years.
Our son Joe wanted to live on campus his last year at school, And we said, okay, you want to do that?
You pay for it.
Make the numbers work.
Mm-hmm.
He busted his butt to save the money to live on campus.
Oh, that's so cool. And that's and that's where I think that you guys, your overall message is so wonderful, because it is possible. It is completely 100% possible to get an education without taking out loans. You just have to do your research and figure out the ways, and you've listed so many of them here, of what you can do, but it is possible. There is hope.
Yep.
We agree.
I don't remember who it was, which president's wife coined the phrase, just say no. But that's one of our phrases.
Mm-hmm.
Just say no to loans.
Yeah.
Right.
And what'll happen when you meet with the financial aid advisor and they say, do you want to take out a loan? Because that's easy for the financial aid person. See, then they all just have to check a box and they send you off somewhere else. If you just say no and cause them to have to do a few more keystrokes to get you into that college, because that's really their goal. They're salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
They want to get your child into the school because they have to fill quotas, they have to fill seats, they have to get students in there, otherwise they won't have a job.
Right.
So we tell them, no, we don't want loans. We want you to do your job a little better and help us find the money to get our child into school. It's going to be a better situation for everybody involved. And your kids will do better. And saying no to loans, it just makes other options possible.
It does. And it's and like you said in the beginning, you know, the average student loan debt right now is $30,000 for students. What that translates into for, you know, the loan payments once they get out of school, it just makes it so difficult for them to be able to truly start their adult lives. And you end up with these boomerang children, as you had mentioned, and it's not doing anybody a service. So
it's hurting our whole economy.
Oh, it
right
is.
Now, I think 2 weeks ago I tweeted that first-time home buyers used to make up 43% of the market. They now make up 33%, a 10% drop, and they're attributing that to the effects that student loans have on people between the age of 20 and 35.
And remember,
so much money is being siphoned off to pay off the loans. They don't have money to buy homes.
And remember, we started our time together with that fabulous statistic that 60% of all parents right now are financially supporting their young adult children.
Oh, just scary.
So,
yeah,
kids are living at home throughout their entire 20s. They're not getting married.
Ugh.
And this is not a good thing. It's not going to be a good thing down.
No, and I know that's my biggest goal as a parent, is I want to create these self-sufficient, healthy adults, which sounds like you have done that times five, so that they can, you know, finish. It doesn't have to be a four-year degree, whatever each one may feel that their passion, wherever it may fall, but they are happy and they're able to support themselves and they're healthy. It's possible, and we don't have to do it by having them take on tons and tons of debt to get there, for sure.
That's right. You know, it's scary when they graduate and they're broke.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Joe was when he graduated in December of last year. He said, Dad, I have no money. I said, Joe, you are actually about $30,000 ahead of your peers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So he had no debt.
Well, he was worried that he didn't have a savings versus...
He had about $1,000 left in the bank when he graduated.
Oh, that's...
Right.
But that's huge compared to the other...
But no school loans.
Yes, well, that's huge. That's what I was just thought that was a chuckle, because that's pretty cute that he was worried he hadn't saved anything during college where he had, because he paid his way through.
Yep,
and
did.
Has no debt. Oh.
All right. Well, great. Thanks for our time today, Celeste.
Oh, you're so welcome. I thank you both. This was such a great discussion, and I could easily have you guys back, because it sounds like we could go into great details, perhaps even next time, talk a little bit more about where you would suggest to look for scholarships. So many great ideas. I sure appreciate you guys touching on everything today. It was wonderful.
You bet.
Now, this was our drink from the fire hydrant.
All right, Celeste.
Thank you both so much. And I know we'll be in touch, but I sure do appreciate your time today. Well, thank you for tuning in for another episode of How to Pay for College HQ. I sure appreciate you being here today. I know your time is very precious, and I feel very honored that you chose to take it to listen to this podcast. And if you are appreciating this information and you'd like more information and want to join our community, where there will be some special bonuses coming soon, head on over to howtopayforcollegehq.com/help. And there, our goal is to help prevent our children from taking on that average student loan debt, which is currently $26,600. And it's just ridiculous. We don't want to weigh down our children. So again, head on over to howtopayforcollegehq.com/help and you can join in on the community, and we will work together to end this crazy student loan debt crisis. So I again thank you so much for your time, and I hope that you have a wonderful week, and I look forward again to talking with you again next Wednesday. Take care.